Welcome to Water Online Radio's coverage from WEFTEC, broadcasting live from Chicago, Illinois. WEFTEC 2015, one world, one water, one event. Water Online Radio is brought to you by WaterOnline.com, showcasing today's water industry leaders and innovators. And now, here are your hosts, Todd Schnick and Kelly Riggs.
All right, welcome back to Water Online Radio's fifth exciting year of coverage from WEFTEC. I'm your host, Todd Schnick, joined by my friend and colleague, Kelly Riggs. Kelly, we're excited to be here. We're kicking off our afternoon session of our day two coverage from WEFTEC. If it's as good as our morning session, we're in great shape.
Yeah, we are in great shape. First guest is going to give us some global perspective. Always a good thing to see the way people see things from a much broader, you know, the 30,000-foot view. Many times our conversations are in the weeds, so it should be a good thing.
Should be a fun conversation. It's on a subject that I wish we could talk more about. I don't feel like we have enough conversations.
Agreed.
On detail at these shows, so looking forward to get into it. We're joined this afternoon by John Batten. He's a Global Water and Cities Director with Arcadis. John, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Todd. Appreciate it. Thank you, Kelly.
Thank you. Great to have you.
Glad to be here.
Well, we're glad to have you.
I love Chicago. Great city.
Yeah. I don't know. We compete with New York, I suppose, here and there. But
hey, they're two great cities.
They are two great cities. So we're appreciative of your time. John, I know you got an awful lot going on. I appreciate you making time to join us. Before we get into our conversation, take a quick second, inform the audience a bit about you and your background, and then give us that 10,000-foot view of Arcadis. What do you do? How do you serve your market?
Okay. Yeah, so I am a water professional. Pretty much came through the wastewater development in the U.S. back in the 70s and 80s. Graduated with an environmental sciences degree and went to a school of public health in a medical university, and then been in water business pretty much most of my professional life. And I'm an urbanite. I'm passionate about urban settings. I live in Manhattan and New York City. And connecting water with urban challenges and quality of life of urban cities is pretty much a passion that I've been pursuing at Arcadis since 2009.
What about Arcadis? Give us the big picture of what they look at.
We've just rebranded ourselves here, Kelly, and the tagline is design and consultancy for natural and built assets. So the natural environment and then the built environment. So we work primarily in four areas: buildings, the environment, in water, and in infrastructure. So transport and these kinds of things would be the definition of infrastructure. So those are our four global business lines. We're 28,000 people. We're covering seven regions. So those seven regions would be North America, Latin America, Continental Europe, UK, Middle East, Asia, and Australia.
Outstanding. So you have a fair amount of coverage, I would suspect. let's shift and talk about the drought in California and other parts of the United States. I want to ask you, what are the solutions to this problem? And I would love for you to comment on that. I also want you to add some insight to, I hear a lot of people say, what's happening in California is the new normal. And it's not going to be ever back to the situation where we're accustomed to from the past. So I was curious you to comment on both those things. Well, you lead us off by talking about some of the solutions to this severe problem.
Yeah, so scarcity really has to be approached, I believe, in a portfolio management approach, right? So desalination is one of the elements of a really good balanced portfolio. But you also need to do conservation. You also need to consider reuse in its multiple forms, indirect potable and direct potable if you can. You need to bring back impaired waters, like Los Angeles is trying to, it recognizes it has a major groundwater resource in the San Fernando Valley, but it's impaired, it's contaminated with perchlorate. So being able to put in a program to restore and recover that water as a part of their portfolio is another example. And then you have obviously the typical suspects for water, you know, surface water from rivers and estuaries, and we have also uncontaminated groundwater. So in portfolio management, municipal approach is to make sure you're pulling water and treating water and managing water with a number of different options, and desal is one of those options.
When you talk about desal, what is that process? We've been That's been on the radar for a very long time, and I suspect it's been through many iterations of how we might approach it. What does it look like today?
Okay, so the original desal technology was built around the Middle East, which is really in a major protracted scarcity issue of water. So they've been they had the availability of oil. So they've been doing multi-stage flash desal or almost distillation for years, and they still do. Mm-hmm. So those like that was like the original cradle of desal, and so most municipalities and countries can't afford to do flash desalination. It's very expensive and very energy intensive. So over the last 20 years, with the onset of membrane filtration and reverse osmosis and these kinds of processes and innovations, we've been able to make desalination much more affordable and much more manageable. The plant that's coming online for Carlsbad is an example of the latest generation of desalination technology.
What does it look like? How's it different?
It's a four-stage, low pressure to high pressure process, so it has various stages of treatment, starting with some microfiltration and ending with ultrafiltration. So it goes through various stages. Uses a lot less energy than the processes we're using, 10 plus years ago. But it is a process which basically, for every 2 gallons of seawater that you treat, you produce 1 gallon of drinking water and 1 gallon of return water, spent water that is returned. So pretty much, and for the Carlsbad facility that we're talking about, it's basically a 50 million gallon a day facility that will be started up next year in 2016, and it will provide about 8% of the county's water demand.
Well, reflecting back on what Todd asked you about the new normal, I suspect if we weren't in that new normal, if scarcity wasn't just an everyday problem, we wouldn't be going through all of those processes to create those kinds of things, would we?
Yeah, I mean, scarcity propels us to think differently and to bring in other ways of managing our portfolio of water, and desalination is definitely one of them. I think you'll definitely see more desal facilities in the world as climate change sort of disrupts weather patterns and brings scarcity into play. I'll give you an example, Kelly. Arcadis led a delegation of Brazilians from the São Paulo area, which is America's largest city. I think Mexico City and São Paulo have 20 million plus people in them. They're in a protracted 3-year drought. So they came to California, which is like the canary in the coal mine, dealing with leading edge approaches to drought management. And that delegation spent a week in Southern California visiting reuse facilities. They did not go to a desal facility. They're more interested in indirect and direct potable reuse. But clearly, desalination is one of their options that they can consider, since the state of São Paulo in the city of Santos is on the Atlantic. So so other countries, other states are affected. The state of São Paulo is equally affected by drought as the state of California.
John, I've had a half dozen interviews with people from the Middle East on this show talking about the desal efforts in the Middle East.
And right.
Why is it less prevalent here in the U.S.? Now, obviously, it seems like such an obvious solution to the scarcity issue, but as you said, it's obviously been cost prohibitive.
Yeah.
Now, as you also said, we're making efforts to make it less cost prohibitive.
Right.
But is cost the only reason why it hasn't taken foothold here in the U.S.?
Well, no. There are certainly environmental concerns and the concerns about returning the brine or returning the concentrated seawater back to the ocean environment. So this is often described as a major hurdle for desalting facilities to be permitted and approved by the public. What's really nice about the Carlsbad facility, which will be the largest, so right now the largest desal facility in the United States is the Tampa Bay facility in Florida. Carlsbad will then eclipse that and become the largest facility at 50 MGD. And what really made that an attractive project is its juxtaposition with the Carlsbad power plant. So they share the same parcel of land. So the desal plant adjoins the power plant, and then the concentrated brine flows out with the cooling water from the power plant. The cooling water power plant's about 300 to 400 million gallons a day of cooling water that's moving out into the ocean, and the power and our Carlsbad's brine is 50 million gallons. So a great deal of dilution there, and for this reason it was really approved through the CEQA process, the California Environmental Quality Act permitting process. So, you know, siting facilities with power facilities like this, like desal and power together, coupled together as a operating unit, is an example of how you can overcome some of the environmental concerns.
Well, I think you mentioned disruptive technology, and I think certainly desal falls into that category. What kind of impacts is it going to have economically and environmentally on a community that adopts it? You spoke of Carlsbad. What kind of impact will it have there?
Well, it's certainly not going to be sitting out by itself as an industrial facility. It's a part of an existing industrial power generating complex. Mm-hmm. So I think that is one attraction, so that it's a part of already an existing industrial looking site. So,
sure.
So I think that's good. There is definitely an issue for siting, because you have to have the right conditions to site the intake and site, you know, the discharge. You have to have the ideal kinds of conditions to create that sort of site. Tampa Bay has that. Tampa Bay is, I think it's Hunter's Point was where the Tampa Bay facility is, an industrial port looking type of facility. So the more you can kind of blend those facilities into an existing landscape, an attractive, it makes the siting more attractive.
Sure.
That's what I'm trying to say.
Okay. I'm thinking back to your commentary around this balanced portfolio,
mm-hmm.
and to an area that's dealing with a scarcity issue. And you mentioned desal as one of those, and then conservation, reuse, and bringing back impaired water.
Yeah.
I'd be curious to know, and this may be a difficult question for you to answer, but let me ask it anyway, and I'm curious as to how you respond. But in terms of a report card on the industry and how they're approaching it, is it balanced? Is the portfolio balanced? Where are we weak? Where are there opportunities to improve and get it to become a balanced portfolio?
Well, certainly urgency and gubernatorial mandates, which says reduce your water consumption by, you know, X percent. I think in California, it's a quarter of reduction mandated by Governor Brown. And the urgency causes utilities and districts in California to be really progressive and really apply that portfolio approach. They've made huge strides in conservation and also pricing water properly. The more you use, the more you pay. And so the whole value of water factors into the portfolio process as well, Todd. So. Are all utilities doing it as well as California? Probably not. That's why the Brazilians came to California, because it happens to be really, you know, leading edge in terms of how to address portfolio management of water. And so when you look at this, the San Diego County, where Carlsbad will represent only 8% of the portfolio through desal, then they're doing a bunch of other things. They're moving, you know, they're managing their water in many different ways. And I think that is the Perth, Australia does really strong portfolio management of all their different water assets. So Australia is probably a leading country in this area around portfolio management of water, and California is right there with them. So I think you'll see more of that trend being adopted. Clearly, São Paulo is thinking that way now, that we need to have a better distribution. It's not just pulling surface water or groundwater as our main supply.
You bet. John, before you get away, have to ask you about your booth. We took a trek through the conference here, saw a very nice booth from Arcadis. Tell us what you're featuring.
We're featuring who we are. We're featuring our solutions and the value that we bring to the world, making the world a better place to live. So we're really focused on livability and quality of life, and bringing those solutions to our clients and to the markets and to the and to the members of those communities. So we're really passionate about value add in the kind of work that we do that makes a difference.
You bet.
John, this is our show, so I'm going to take the liberty, since we have a few extra minutes here, you cited a passion for urban water issues at the top of the show. I would be intrigued for you to share what you think over the next 3 to 5 years, what are some really cool opportunities there that we ought to be keeping an eye on?
Well, you know, Todd, the buzzword right now is resiliency, resiliency, and it has a broad application as it's applied by the Rockefeller Foundation, so the definition can be economic, social, but clearly it's related to water and the challenges of water in cities. So most cities were developed around water. With very, very few exceptions, water was really why a city was founded, for trade and these kinds of commercial needs. And then with that placement of cities around water, then there's been covering of streams and blocking of the river edge, okay? And so right now there's a whole movement to let the river move, let tides come in and out. Let's not constrict these natural water movements. And so I think a real trend, you see this in the Netherlands where we're headquartered, is they call it room for the river. So begin to design natural systems and begin to rethink the built environment to accommodate how water moves up and down, be it tidal effects, be it influenced by rainfall, and really live with the river rather than really trying to constrict the river. You see this in the Los Angeles River, how there is a whole movement to restore that river. It was paved over and became basically a drainage ditch. And now there's a whole huge movement that Frank Gehry, now we learned, is involved with, is to restore that water, just restore that river, remove the concrete that's been bottom of that river for years and make it a natural part of the cities. Because cities love rivers, they love water, and the best cities in the world are located on water. So that's just a quick answer to your question.
Are we still allowed to turn our rivers green on St. Patrick's Day?
I think that's very natural.
I'll let you ponder that one. Yeah. John, we're out of time. Before I let you go, how can people contact you should they have questions, and where can they learn more about the important work being done at Arcatis?
Well, they can contact me, so john.batten@arcatis.com, and I won't throw my phone number out there, but that's the best way to reach me.
Perfect.
Through my email address at Arcatis.
All right. John Batten, Global Water and Cities Director with Arcatis. John, great to have you. Thanks for stopping by and joining us.
Todd and Kelly, a real pleasure.
Great,
pleasure,
sir.
Pleasure was ours. All right. That's all the time we have for now. On behalf of my co-host, Kelly Riggs, our producer, Floyd Fischel, and all of us at Water Online, I'm Todd Schnick. Our exclusive coverage from WEFTEC. We'll be right back.